Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We are glad that you have chosen to click in with us today. Logan, how are you, man? I feel like I'm running on fumes. I kind of stayed up with that World Series game last night. I didn't think the Astros were going to pull it out, but they did, and they actually did it without me. I left them when it became 5-5. I thought, well, I'm just gonna go on to bed.
You know, I've watched every wild card game. I watched the division series. I watched the you know, league championship series, and I watched the first game of the World Series. And then last night I had to go to Mississippi State's women's basketball inter-squad scrimmage. And they went 5 quarters. I thought they were going to end at 4, and then they put 10 more minutes on the clock. And yeah, it was late when I was getting out of there, and I still had to write it up after that. So I didn't get to see a single pitch of that game. And I'm kicking myself because it looked like it was an incredible ball game to watch.
Well, it looks like one of those instant classics, man. If you're the Astros, you've got to win the Justin Verlander game. And they were finally able to do that. Hey, folks, this is not a World Series podcast most of the time. It is a college football podcast, or all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and we're going to talk college football here in just a moment. Before we get deeper into the program, I want to remind you about other podcasts to search for from the Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast coming to you every Wednesday and Friday with Derek Russell and Chris Kiefer. And our high school sports podcast with Dalton Middleton and Brad Locke. That's Prep Rally. That comes to you every Wednesday. And Logan and I are here with you once a week with Double Coverage, talking Mississippi State and Ole Miss, rounding the corner and heading for home in the football season, as you might say. The Rebels coming off a loss to LSU. They're at home against Arkansas Saturday morning at 11, a vulnerable Arkansas team, as it looks right now. Both teams actually struggling with some injuries. And, Logan, where are you this week, man? You're at A&M, right?
Yeah, heading out to Texas. I'll get on the road early in the morning. Got to go pick up the rental car this afternoon in between covering two high school volleyball games and trying to get on the road as early as possible to make that trip. It's the first time I've driven out to A&M. I've flown the last two trips. And, last time when I flew out there, I had to get home via Charlotte, North Carolina. So to get home from Texas, I had to go to North Carolina. So I'm going to drive it this time and see if I can't make that trip a little quicker.
Look, man, I know that you are a proponent of flying. I'm going to tell you, I like the drive out to A&M because it's so difficult to get through the air. And, I stayed when I was out there last year with Ole Miss. I stayed at a little town I'd never heard of called Buffalo, Texas. Stayed at a Hampton Inn off the interstate. And when I woke up the next morning, it was just like driving from Tupelo to Starkville to get to the campus. And when the game was over, Logan, there were 100,000 people trying to get to Houston, but I was in a very small crowd trying to get back to Buffalo, Texas. So, I don't know. I don't know where you're staying or what route you're taking, but I thought the drive to Texas A&M really worked well for me last year.
Yeah, I'm got a room reserved in Lufkin, Texas, and it's like almost 2.5 hours away. So it's basically like staying in Birmingham to come to a Mississippi State home game. So it's going to be a little bit of a drive, but it's on the way down there and it's on the way back. So I'm actually cutting off a little bit of my trip on some of those travel days. So I'll knock a little bit of it out. It's going to make for a late night. Saturday night, it's probably going to turn into Sunday morning before I actually get back to the hotel and get settled in. But hey, that's part of the job.
That is part of the job. Tell me about the Bulldogs' big win over Kentucky. Logan, I've watched this Kentucky team. I know they were 5-1 going into that game. I just had not been impressed with Kentucky, with how they had played. The only loss was a close game to Florida. And I'm looking at that because that's where Ole Miss is next week. The Rebels will be in Lexington. And it, it looks to me like, you know, nothing is easy for this Ole Miss team, especially right now without Shea Patterson, Jordan Tamu making his first start this week against Arkansas. But tell me about Kentucky, because it, you know, State obviously dominated that game. I know the Bulldogs were able to run the football. What were your impressions there?
Yeah, I was kind of the same boat that you were. I wasn't impressed with Kentucky's record. I mean, obviously they had found a way to win all those games, but they are all close. I think their biggest win this season was by 11 points. And, you know, they've played some bad teams over that stretch. They barely beat a Missouri team at home. So, you know, they just really weren't that impressive, you know, with what they've done, but they've still found a way to win. But, you know, you could tell by that opening drive that Mississippi State got, you know, it was like one of those 13-play, 75-yard drives where they just churned out first down after first down after first down. And Nick Fitzgerald started the game strong, 5 of 5 passing on that opening drive, you know, for 50 yards. You know, ran the ball well on that opening drive. And you could just tell that State's offensive line were dominating Kentucky defensively, their defensive front. And it was just going to be one of those type of games. And it was. And State played really well. They ran the ball well. I think it was Nick Fitzgerald's overall his best all-around game this season. You know, he's had some great games where he's ran the ball this year, but, you know, the passing has been kind of lacking. And, you know, he didn't put up huge numbers passing, only threw for 155 yards, but there were a lot of short, accurate passes. He wasn't missing high and low like he had been the previous weeks, and didn't throw an interception in the game, which was key too. And, you know, they just dominated that game from start to finish and got some backups in. Keaton Thompson came in and scored a couple of rushing touchdowns himself. And, you know, Nick Fitzgerald runs for over 100 yards. Keaton had some success on the ground. It was just a great all-around game for them. And, you know, State defensively, you know, held Kentucky to 260 yards on the day. The only touchdown that Kentucky scored probably shouldn't have been scored. They had a kind of a bogus pass interference call where the receiver falls down and the, you know, official on the other side of the field throws a late flag in there. And, you know, that gave them a first down. And next thing you know, Steven Johnson takes off running and he gets down to about the 3-yard line and he sort of holds the ball out and sort of threw it towards the end zone and kind of one hopped a receiver in the end zone. And they called it a fumble and a recovery right there in the end zone. So, you know, it's just kind of a strange touchdown to give up there, but, you know, obviously didn't hurt Mississippi State. They go on to win 45-7, and it really wasn't close. You know, it should have been you know, a lot more lopsided than it actually was. State missed a couple of opportunities. Their second drive, they started at midfield and goes 3 and out. That was kind of one of the only disappointments that I saw from Mississippi State this past weekend. I thought they should have got some points up on that second drive starting at midfield. You know, that early in the ball game, you want to take advantage of some good field position. But, you know, State this weekend, headed out to A&M. We're going to have to see what that Bulldog team is doing on the road. But I know, you know, with your game, Parrish, it was a big – not only was it a loss on the school board, it was also a huge loss in personnel with Shea Patterson going down.
Well, it was a big loss because, you know, obviously if Ole Miss is going to win games, they're going to have to outscore teams. This is not a very good defensive team. And now that, you know, that comes into question without Shea Patterson at quarterback. I think the biggest difference you're going to see here now, number one, I think for a lot of Ole Miss fans, you just don't know Jordan Tamu. You didn't hear about him in a big recruiting battle. You know, he's a 3-star junior college kid who shows up. He did get to campus early. He was one of those December signees, so he was able to go through spring drills when Phil Longo was installing the new offense. He's a different type of quarterback. You know, in the limited viewable practice periods that we have seen, you know, I think this could be okay. What the big difference is going to be, I don't think the deep ball is going to be the weapon that it has been for Ole Miss, because Shea Patterson could throw a deep ball now and it was going to be pretty accurate and he was going to get the receivers the ball downfield that way. I don't see that as much from Tamu, although he did throw a couple of deep passes in the spring game. He was throwing them against walk-on cornerbacks that you just had not heard of before. Tamu is going to be one to make plays with his legs more. I think you're going to see some called quarterback runs while Patterson was very mobile and athletic. Yeah, he really didn't just take off and run a lot this year. He was more one to scramble out of the pocket and try to keep his eyes downfield and make a play that way, and often he did. And you could see in a couple of games recently where he would just move to his left or right. And, you know, if he found one of those receivers coming back to the ball or breaking free, you know, that's the difference in maybe 20 yards or 25 yards rather than just running 5 yards for the first down. I think you're going to see more called runs for Jordan Tamu. I don't know exactly what you're going to see right now from him in the deep passing game. I do think you're going to see a lot of slants called early, a lot of quick passes out to the receivers. I think you might see Van Jefferson get more involved now, the second slot receiver, because I think those routes are going to be shorter. I do think they're going to rely on A.J. Brown right now to try and get him the ball. They want him now more than ever to be that physical wide receiver that can break tackles. But looking at the LSU game right now, Tamu came in at the end of the first half. It was the first time we have seen this guy in meaningful game action, the first time he's played when the game has still been up in the air. And he takes over at the end of the first half after the Patterson injury and drives the Rebels down for a field goal. He got some nice help in the run game there as well from Eric Swinney, who was in the game at that time. Swinney had runs of 13 and 14 yards on that field goal drive, and Tamu himself had a 15-yard run. So, you know, he looked very smooth and fluid moving the Rebels down the field there at the end of the first half, led them on a touchdown drive late in the game. At that time, the game had already been decided. Logan, I thought it was odd earlier in the year that we had not seen Jordan Tamu in a couple of these blowouts. You know, he barely got in the game against South Alabama. He came in really for basically the last play of the game, and it was a handoff. He didn't play against Tennessee Martin. All right. And, you know, he didn't get into the Vanderbilt game until later. And when he did, he didn't attempt to pass. So I thought it's been odd that we haven't seen him. I think he could be a little more prepared for the speed of the game than he is right now. But that's where it is. Now, what I've seen from this guy in practice, again, the viewable periods are limited. But, you know, I don't see someone who is panicked. He looks composed. He looks relaxed. And people who have seen him, you know, a lot more in practice in the more meaningful 11-on-11 periods of practice describe him in that way. Guys within the program, you know, talk about him as being kind of a surfer dude. You know, he's from Hawaii. They talk about him being just relaxed and composed. We'll see. Jordan Tamu coming up, he'll start the Arkansas game for Ole Miss. The big question, Logan, is going to be, can the Rebels slow down the run? I mean, I don't look at this team anymore as one that might stop the run, but you go back and look at LSU, Logan. LSU was just 7 yards away from 400 rushing yards against Ole Miss. Not 300, which has become kind of the norm in SEC play, but 400. The Rebels still having problems fitting those gaps consistently. Now, one thing this team has done, they've gotten some pretty fair play along the defensive line. And if you're just running straight at the Rebels, they can do pretty good there. It's kind of that B gap, or it's that, you know, it's with LSU, it was the jet sweep. Lots of times we'll see a team, you know, run off tackle and bounce outside. It's kind of setting that edge, you know, linebackers not being in position at times. So still struggling at that position. But by and large, the Rebels are having trouble slowing down the run. You look in SEC play against Auburn, Alabama, and LSU, those three teams that are pretty good at running the ball, have rushed for at least 320 yards. Alabama was up over the 350 mark. I want to say Auburn was in the 320s, but LSU almost 400 yards on the ground. So that's going to be a key for Ole Miss this week, and frankly, every week, whether or not they can slow the opponent's run game. As far as LSU goes, Logan, I was able to look at this three-game homestand on the schedule and say this is big. This is, you know, this is important for the Rebels. They started it with a win over Vanderbilt. They were competitive until the end of the third one possession game. end up losing. If they get this Arkansas game, then it's 2 out of 3. You know, maybe that affects how they think about themselves, a little bit of confidence. There are still some games on the schedule that they could win. I think they could possibly win at Kentucky. I think at home against Louisiana Lafayette is a game the Rebels should also win. Texas A&M earlier in the season, Logan, you're looking at that as a possibility, but I think the Aggies have been better than expected. Now, what do you see from this A&M team as State gets ready to go there to Kyle Field?
They're improving. You know, early in the season, they looked they jumped out to that huge lead against UCLA out in Los Angeles, out in Pasadena, the very first ball game, and let that lead slip away. I don't know if they just took their foot off the gas or what, and UCLA comes back and wins, and then they struggle against Nicholls State and Louisiana Lafayette in back-to-back games there. So those first three games were pretty rough for A&M, and they've kind of been able to right the ship. I mean, you're really just it's still not that impressive in some of their wins, but I think they're getting a lot of credit for kind of hanging with Alabama. They're the team that played Alabama the closest. Alabama's kind of just been running roughshod through everybody on their schedule except for A&M. A&M was kind of able to hang with them there at Kyle Field earlier this season, so they're getting a lot of credit for that. And I think A&M is improving. They're obviously a lot better than they were at the beginning of the season, but they're coming off a open date, so they got an extra week to prepare for Mississippi State to get a little bit healthy. Mississippi State hasn't played well on the road in conference play. They've been blown out in Athens and at Auburn in back-to-back weeks, and State's came back home. They had a 3-game homestand, played well in those games, a 2-game homestand and then a bye week in there as well. So, so State's played well over the last couple of games. They've got a little bit of their swagger back. And A&M's the team that they had success against last year. That was Mississippi State's biggest win of the year. A&M came into Starkville ranked number 4 in the country, and Mississippi State just blew them out. I mean, it didn't. Final score ended up being 35-28, but the game really wasn't even that close. I mean, State scored on the very first play of the game on a 74-yard run by Nick Fitzgerald. State ended up running for 365 yards in that ball game. They totaled nearly 600 yards of offense against A&M in that game. And Nick Fitzgerald runs for 182 yards and 2 touchdowns. Aris Williams had 140 yards and a touchdown. So State just, chewed up huge chunks of yardage during that ball game against A&M. And I'm sure that's going to be the game plan again this year, is just to try to chew up as many yards, keep those chains moving, and try to use the same recipe that got them success this past year in Starkville. But I'm sure A&M's preparing that same way. They had an extra week to prepare, and I think that they know what's coming at them. Mississippi State's strength again this year is running the football, and they're going to get a steady dose of Nick Fitzgerald, Aris Williams. I'm sure they're going to get Kylan Hill and Nick Gibson involved in the running game as well. But last week against Kentucky, State's passing game showed a little bit of signs of improvement. Donald Gray had some catches. He ended up with about 50 yards receiving. They got the tight end involved. Jordan Thomas had some nice catches, including a touchdown in that game. So the passing game's improving, a little bit. I mean, it's not leaps and bounds better than it was, and it's not great by any means, but it is better, and it's taken a little bit of stress off of the running game. But State, should be getting their left tackle back. They've played the last might as well say the last 3 ball games without Martinez Rankin. He goes out in the third series against Auburn and hasn't played since with an ankle sprain, and they're expected to get him back, and that's going to help them, just having that left tackle back. And, one thing that I'm really looking for in this A&M game, Texas A&M leads the country in sacks per game. They average 4 sacks a game, and then Mississippi State on the other side is number 2 in the country. They've only allowed 3 sacks the entire year. So, actually, A&M is averaging more sacks per game than Mississippi State has given up the entire year. So, it's going to be something to watch, kind of good on good, and we'll kind of have to see how State shakes up against the nation's best pass rush.
Hey, Logan, this might be on your radar from learning about Texas A&M this week. Early in the season, as I recall, and I know you do too, lots of talk about Kevin Sumlin having to win this season. And some of the things I read back then said he had to win 9 or 10 games. And you know, and I don't think anybody expected him to do that. I think this A&M team has been a little better than some folks thought it would be at the beginning of the year. Just in learning about the Aggies this week, have you heard anything more about that? That Sumlin job talk seems to have died down a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's been able to right the ship. And, I mean, for so many years, I mean, it's just – I think over the last several years he's been 8-5, 8-5, 8-5. And it reminded me a lot of Southern Miss, you know, over the years when they had Bauer. You know, they were doing really well, but they were just kind of the same every single year, you know, which is pretty good, but you kind of get complacent with kind of being in that same spot. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of that. I mean, most teams would love to have an 8-5 type of season, you know, with A&M and – but obviously there's a lot of money that goes into that school. You know, it's a big, big fan base, and they want to see results. They want to have A&M competing for a conference championship every year. And, you know, they've invested a lot of money in that stadium and in that program. So, you know, they're expected to win there. And Kevin Sumlin is still under the hot seat. If he loses a couple of games, you know, they're going to – all that talk's going to go right back up. But, you know, right now I think he's safe.
Yeah, it will turn quickly. Nice new press box there with the renovations they've made. When I was there last year, there was this big, long line at the elevator, man. We were trying to get back up to the press box before the game, and the line had just backed up, and I couldn't see what was going on until I peered around the corner and saw George H.W. Bush there in a wheelchair and Secret Service folks getting him into the elevator and up to his seat, which was – you know, a pretty good one, I am sure. So, yeah, lots of money there at Texas A&M. Hope you get to make it to Freebirds, Logan. That's the place I like to hit when I'm out that way. Looking at the Rebels and Arkansas, lots of injuries in this game on both sides. We've talked about the absence of Shea Patterson for Ole Miss. Another key injury I think the Rebels or the fans need to watch is Jordan Wilkins at running back. He's kind of led a run game resurgence here of late. The last three or four games, Wilkins really running hard, and we're seeing more production from the Ole Miss run game. The Rebels in five games, the first five games this season, cracked the 100-yard mark only one time, and that was for 102 yards against South Alabama in the season opener. They've been much more competent, very good, actually, in the run game the last couple of weeks. A big part of that has been Wilkins and how hard he has been running. He turned an ankle against LSU. He was listed earlier in the week as questionable for the Arkansas game. Matt Luke on Wednesday updated Wilkins to probable. So Wilkins will play in the game. The question will be, can he continue to run hard on that ankle the way he has been for the last several weeks? Now, there looks to be a little bit of a changing of the guard at running back behind Wilkins. Eric Swinney was the reserve who was on the field when Wilkins got hurt late in the first half. It was Eric Swinney who helped Tamu lead the field goal drive there against LSU. That was a time where we would have seen Devon Penniman, but it was actually Penniman who scored the touchdown late in the game. That was mop-up duty where we had been seeing Eric Swinney. So Swinney, it was one of the top high school running backs in the country in the class of 2015. He signed with Ole Miss, and since then he's had two major injuries, and he hasn't been able to quite regain the form that they recruited him with. But he thinks he's there now. Matt Luke says his burst is back. And we'll see if Eric Swinney gets more carries and if his role increases this week against Arkansas. From the Razorbacks' perspective, they've had some injuries as well. They'll be starting at quarterback, redshirt freshman Cole Kelly, a big guy, a 6'7", almost 270 pounds, a big quarterback, so not especially mobile there. The Rebels could see Austin Allen in this game. The senior, the regular starting quarterback, has been out with a shoulder injury. They've been working him back. He's been making progress in practice. Doesn't look like he'll start the game unless something changed very late in the week, but he could play against Ole Miss. We'll see how that goes. Be that as it may, both of these guys are pocket passers, and Ole Miss has been able to rush the passer pretty well. If they can get Arkansas into situations where it needs to throw. You know, that's going to be the key for Ole Miss. Can they slow the run? Can they get the Razorbacks in a 3rd and 8 and make them throw the football? If so, they should have a chance to get some pressure on the quarterback, because Arkansas has not performed well on the offensive line this year. They have had some injuries. They have had some production issues as well. Right now, they will be playing without their senior all-SEC performer, their center, Frank Ragnow, who was injured against Auburn last week. That's a big loss for Arkansas along the offensive line. The Razorbacks will also be without their starting running back, Chase Hayden. Again, Ole Miss has had such a time trying to stop the run. It almost doesn't matter who the running backs are. But those are two key injuries for Arkansas. This has been an unusual series, Logan. The last few years, it just looks like Arkansas has had Ole Miss's number. Hugh Freeze and his 5 seasons will be remembered for 2 wins over Nick Saban, but he could only manage 1 win over Brett Bielema. Freeze defeated the Razorbacks in 2012, his first season in Little Rock on a late field goal. The next season, Bielema's first, Ole Miss won 34-24 in Oxford. Since then, it's been all Arkansas, and every game's been a little bit unusual. Ole Miss was coming off that devastating Laquon Treadwell injury, where they not only lost their best player, but they also lost the SEC West in the playoffs, and was a better Arkansas team. It was a better Ole Miss team in 2015, and the offense has moved up and down the field, and Arkansas completes the lateral. The guy picks it up, runs, gets a first down, 4th and 25. They're going to win the game 53-52 in overtime. That game, Logan, kept Ole Miss out of the SEC West championship game. The Rebels would have been West champs. As it played out with them going on and winning at Mississippi State. Had they won that Arkansas game, they would have won the SEC West with the tiebreaker over Alabama. So, you know, it's been kind of all Arkansas lately. It was 34-30, Arkansas winning in Fayetteville last year. And again, if Ole Miss wins that game, then maybe they get a little bit of momentum going in the second half of the year. It looked like they were turning the corner after those early losses to Florida State and Alabama, and they go to Arkansas against a team that was okay. That was just okay. The Razorbacks were ranked number 22 at the time, and Ole Miss falls behind early, and they spend a lot of energy catching up. They could never stop the run against Arkansas running back Raleigh Williams. So anyway, it's been an Arkansas series of late. It's a vulnerable team that comes into Vaught-Hemingway Stadium on Saturday. We'll see if Ole Miss can slow down the run and can play good offense behind a new quarterback in Jordan Tamu. Folks, we thank you for clicking in with us today for this edition of Double Coverage. We want to make sure you remember our other podcast, The Memo, for all things Northeast Mississippi. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday with Derek Russell and Chris Kiefer. And be sure to check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. That's every Wednesday with Brad Locke and Dalton Middleton. And Logan and I will be back here with you next week for another round of Double Coverage.